Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Cafe Esoterica Radio. This is your hostess, Sean Margaret Cohen, and I'm back with my new podcast all about healing the heart called The Shape of My Heart. I want to explore the subject of unresolved emotions like fear, heartbreak, abandonment, childhood wounds, grief, and loss, and any other subject that's lost healthy love. And I want to share my techniques, which I've used over many decades with myself, as well as my clients and students, to heal these issues once and for all. So pull up a cozy chair as the autumn leaves fall and the winter winds whip, and settle in. Why not pour yourself a nice cappuccino or herbal tea or perhaps some old wine and listen to stories taken from my own life's experiences as well as my many, many, many clients and students and your calls. We'd love to have your calls about heartbreak and how to heal it. I'm taking you deep within the heart of the matter every Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. UK time, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, and worldwide. Just find your time zone and dive in. You can share your stories of love, heartbreak, and loss too, and victory over adversity in our chat room as we go live on blogtalkradio.com, and also follow us on Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, and Spotify. And email the show, please do. We'd love to have your emails on theshapeofmyheartbyseanmcohen@gmail.com. Call in the show, please. We'd love to have your calls on area code 516-387-1492. And we have our own private Facebook group. So if you want to do all the techniques and follow along with us, please go to Facebook and just put in the search, The Shape of My Heart, and we'd love to have you there. Let's get healed. Welcome to my new heartfelt podcast. I'm so pleased to be back and have you with me, called The Shape of My Heart. How's the shape of your heart? Let's find out together, shall we? Everyone, I'm sorry you're hearing me shuffle things around as I'm trying to fix the ongoing problem of the Blog Talk Radio having some kind of interference every time I do a live feed on, like I'm trying to do a live camera feed on YouTube. So if you're out there listening land and you can hear me, welcome to The Shape of My Heart, Sean M. Cohen. And we're under Cafe Esoterica Radio, so go to YouTube. If you want to watch the show live, go to YouTube. You can hear me moving things around. Put in Cafe Esoterica Radio, and you will find me there. Now, if I can get the right camera angle, or okay, there's things flying around already. The spookies have joined us. Okay, tonight's episode going to be about, you know, we're in this 12-week series, The Shape of My Heart. Now, why did I do this series? Why? I'll tell you why. Because I see too many people in too much heartbreak. I see people in my clinic, in my professional life. I see friends, family members. It's not even just, you know, yes, COVID, all the things that have gone with this, good, bad, and indifferent, you know. But it is very much about that we're emotionally intelligent people, that nobody teaches us how to be emotionally intelligent people. Now, what does this mean? Well, we're going to find out tonight. And the series that I invented or created, if you will, my podcast, my new podcast, you know, for 3 years I interviewed some of the best people in mind, body, and spirit. So all these different
fields connected with, psychology and outstanding mental achievements, development, spiritual development, divination, right? Also, holistic healers, Reiki healers, acupuncturists, naturopaths, functional medicine doctors, and, even the odd rock star. So that's all in Cafe Esoterica Radio and the blog, on Blog Talk Radio, which is our home, are the archive shows. So that's 3 years of shows, right? I interview great guests. I call them the most enlightened guests because they really were. The problem is that, I thought that would actually kind of do it. But what I see is that doesn't even come near to really get deep into the heart of the matter. And for me, the heart of the matter is really going emotionally, dive bombing into all the things that stop, block, healthy relationship of, children today. This is a subject for tonight, broken homes. They grow up in broken homes. When I was growing up, divorced, your parents were divorced. Oh my God, what a scandal it was, And it wasn't a religious thing, although religion at the time was very evident. And now most couples get divorced. And where does that leave the children? And some people grow up with never knowing a parent, either through death or abandonment. And how does this affect the child? How does this affect their adult relationships? Well, we're going to talk about it. And I think it's very sad that a lot of children grow up never knowing another parent. I was thinking about Jonathan's anniversary of his death, 40 years, just passed, 78. And I remember when he died. And I think it was such a shock. The real shock, absolute abomination, if that wasn't bad enough, was, his poor son, Sean, who was only 5 years old. And when a person rectifies the past, he did John through therapy and a lot of inner work. You hear that song, Mother, I needed you, but you didn't need me. Father, you left me, but I never left you. Very powerful, heartbreaking lyric. Unfortunately, most adults haven't a clue how to raise children. And I'm sorry to say that. The outcome is obvious in society, right? And what we have, just welcoming in my YouTube, hold on. My YouTube. Hello, YouTube. It's just streaming live now. I'm just going to try and get this up. I have something. Okay. Right. Go. Okay. I think I've got it. I think it's coming now. Come on. Sorry to interrupt. Okay. Today, we're going to deal with broken families. It's not my subject. And it's right before Christmas.
Just welcoming in my...
Oh, wow.
Hold on.
Okay. So I am so bad at these things. I need a sound technician. I need someone who knows how to run all these things. I'm not equipped to do this. So if the sound doesn't work last week, probably because I was, trying to film myself on YouTube with one computer and trying to broadcast on Blog Talk Radio with the other. And now I'm trying to put up, Instagram, and it's not working, of course. So maybe I'm just greedy. I want to put it out on all things because I think everybody wants and needs this information. But if not, if it's
welcoming,
oh, jeez, I don't know. That's not going to work. Okay, forget it. So let's get on with the show. Okay. So tonight, if you want to call into the show, and you can in America, area code 516, that's Long Island, last I looked, 387-1942, that is your direct line to the studio. I will take your call. As we approach Christmas and get closer to that, tonight is Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah for all those who celebrate. And as we get closer to Christmas and Christmas Eve, and I will be here until the end of the year, right? My last show is going to be, for this podcast of 12 shows, is going to be right as the year ends. So 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I have five. After this show, I have four more shows. And it was a series of 12. It was always going to be a series of 12 because I wanted to collectively talk about a theme. And this theme is really about heartbreak. That's why the show is called The Shape of My Heart. And, you know, what is the shape of your heart if you come from a broken home? Well, it's not. And isn't a guilt trip to make parents not get divorced if they hate each other, okay? I grew up with two parents who were vehemently opposite and really hated each other, and they took it out on not only each other, but their children. So I would say to any parents right up front, if you're not happy in your marriage and it's miserable, it's making your children miserable. And you are not doing them any favors by staying in a marriage or a relationship that actually, you know, oh, we're just staying together for the kids. That's bullshit. Okay, let me be very, very clear. No child is going to grow up emotionally healthy in a toxic environment. And no matter how much you think you're hiding it or playing games behind their back, like, you know, the children are very psychic. They're very tuned in. And believe you me, they know. They know you're not happy. They know that you would rather be anywhere but there. They can feel it. They feel it very deeply, children. They want to take a drink of water. So my advice to you is get real. Going, you're not happy. But, and here's the but, don't leave your children behind. Don't walk away and never go back. Don't walk away and say, oh, well, some other man will love them. Because it's usually men who walk out the door. I can't say it's all men because it isn't, but it's usually men who walk out the door. And when they walk out the door and never look back, they damage their children for the rest of their lives. They're little floating stones around me. Not a lot of spirit activity in my house. And what happens is they learn how not to commit to a relationship. They learn how to perhaps be angry at that parent the rest of their lives. They also learn how to abandon their children. Learn that they're not important. Their value is really diminished because the parent who shoulda, woulda, coulda been there, wasn't there. And some people, through death of a parent, you know, I was listening to Paul McCartney talk about when his mother died at 14, you know, was like any teenager, but his first thought was, how are we going to rebuild? Because his mother was a midwife and she was working. When John's mother died, hit by a car, he wasn't living with his mother, John Lennon. And so it was a double tragedy because he had just gotten back to being quite close to her and he was 16. There is no easy age to lose a parent. Remember in this entire series, I'm talking again and again about how two children, their parents are gods. So this little baby looks up at you and it is absolutely in love with you. The minute it arrives, it cannot distinguish if you're a drunk or an alcoholic right away. It can't distinguish if you come from such emotional dysfunction that you don't know how to love it or love yourself. It can't distinguish whether you have narcissistic personality disorder. It can't distinguish if you're bipolar. It can't distinguish if you're more interested in going shopping, you know, and drinking cocktails with the girls than being a mother or a parent. So, you know, I say all these things because these are the things that block love. These are the things that stop a child from having a healthy relationship with their, not only parent, but their future spouse or future partner. So when you hurt yourself, your parent, and you're in a toxic marriage or relationship, you hurt the child too. If you don't know that, and you haven't even sussed that, one wonders why you even bothered to have children. And yes, children arrive because, you know, accidents happen, but in heaven, there are no accidents. The children that are meant to be here are here for a reason. They have a mission. Some could say, we planned our child and we planned to have children and we had children and it was great. And that is the absolute top whack way to have children. There's no question. Two of the emotional parents, two parents who are devoted to the child and love the child, two parents that want to care for the child. They both work, one works, whatever. And there is an equal energy between the two parents for the child. When a parent says, well, that's your child, that you wanted a boy, so you take care of him. You wanted a girl, so you take care of her. Yeah, that's abandonment. It's covered up in a narcissistic, sandwich. But basically, that's what it is. It's abandonment. You've already decided, oh, I'm not going to be part of that child, even if you're living in the same house. And I've seen that. I've seen people reject their children because they're not the sex that they wanted. These children grow up so completely crazy that they would do anything to their parents. Even, dare I say it, change their sex. Yeah. A lot of this, Che, I want to be a boy and I want to be a girl. Do you know, in heaven, according to Michael Newton's book, which are all about the in-between, where we are in heaven, how we plan our next life. We get to choose three different bodies. We choose our parents. We choose our socioeconomical situation. We choose the race we are, the religion we're going to be, if we're going to be any religion. And we choose what location we're going to be born in. And all these things are actually our free will in action. So when people say, well, I was born into a terrible story, I relate. I was born into a terrible world. But once I studied metaphysics, I began to understand what must have been the reason I chose that. Why would I choose to have my older brother be favored or my parents hate each other, And through the many, many hours in books and things that I've read and work that I've done on myself, I realized that I wanted to be the hero of my own journey this time. I didn't want my husband to be the hero. I didn't want my father to be the hero. I really wanted to be my own sort of champion. And it was really important for me to go through a lot of hell in order to be able to get up from that hell and move into a place where I could empower the people. Now, there's no good sitting in school for 4 years and working away with the perfect outcome. Life and saying, oh, I'll be a great teacher here, because quite frankly, you may have the intellectual capability, but you don't have the experience of what it's like to suffer. You don't have the experience of what it's like to grow up in a dysfunctional, really toxic family. And I wouldn't wish it on a dog. Honestly, I wouldn't. I think it's important for us to get that, to understand that, to put that in the old head. And then move into, okay, how can I make sure the next generation, my own children, do not grow up in this toxic soup. And so I'm going to just read to you a few things that I've written down. There is a beautiful and very detailed report, The Impact of Family Structure on the Health of Children, Effects of Divorce, which I have right here. I've printed out. Now, we have a Facebook group, and it's called The Shape of My Heart on Facebook. And if you really, really, really want to, you know, delve deep, get into any of these things that I've talked about over the last 7 years, by all means, join us. It's great. I'm in there all the time putting up new and interesting things about emotional intelligence and how to heal from any of the barrage of experiences that could really screw people up. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. So I think it's really good to come in our group. If you can't find it, find me on Facebook under Sean Margaret Cohen, and I will lead you there. I will lead you to the Holy Land, which is, I'm kidding, The Shape of My Heart on Facebook. Now, the other thing that I would really like to talk to you about is, if you want to email the show, if you're interested in emailing the show, you can email the show at cafeesoterica@gmail.com. And that's, you know, one. And you can also email the show at the shape of my heart by Sean M. Cohen @gmail.com. So let's see if I can, I'm just guessing if I can get into it. Oh, sorry, that's my Instagram. I don't know why it won't let me do a video tonight. It's so bizarre because people are waiting for this. Okay. What's going to happen? I don't know why. I don't know what is going on, but it won't work. Okay. So, right. So, talk a little bit about what happened. So, let me read this and see if this, you know, makes you see some things and feel some things and think about some things that perhaps you hadn't before. And I'm reading it from this report, which I will link up in the, if you look below in the YouTube, after this is done, after the broadcast is finished, I will put the link there. I'll also put the link for our Facebook group, and you can find it. It is really detailed, but it's really worth knowing. But here we go. This is from the University of California, San Francisco, and the American College of Pediatricians, and it says, three decades of research evaluating the impact of family structure on the health and well-being of children demonstrates that children living with their married biological parents consistently have better physical, emotional, and academic well-being. Is that any surprise to anyone? It's no surprise to me, I must say. You know, children need their parents, and they need their biological parents, and they need the parents to love them. That is the bottom line. You can create all kinds of other stories. I did. My daughter was raised just by me. No contact with her father. That was his choice. And, you know, she did go through some stuff because of it. So let's go back. So it says, pediatricians in society should promote the family structure that has the best chance of producing healthy children. The best signs literature today suggests that, with the exception of parents faced with unresolvable marital violence, and you could also say drug addiction in that whole, children fare better when parents work at maintaining the marriage. Consequently, society should make every effort to support healthy marriages and to discourage married couples from divorcing unless it's really bad. You know what I mean? They can't go to couples therapy, then, you know, then they get divorced, but at least, you know, stay with your children, love your children, create space in your life, your separate lives, to make sure your children are okay. And it goes on, and it says, epidemiology, the demographics of families are changing. With that, the philosophical underpinnings of relationships are also changing. Many young adults, marriage is old-fashioned and confining, and that open cohabitation, open cohabiting relationships provide a healthier option that is more conducive to personal development. If a relationship does not provide personal happiness, parents often believe that their children will adapt to new family relationships so that divorce or separation will have few long-term adverse consequences. These beliefs have led to marriage occurring later, women having fewer children and doing so later in life, single mothers giving birth to many of our children, more parents cohabitating, and fewer children living with their married biological parents. In 1960, the average age of a woman's first marriage was 20.3 years. That of men was 22.8 years. When we look back on that now, we think we're quite young to get married. But in 2010, that changed so that the median age of first marriage was 25.8 years for women and 28.3 years for men. In 1960, the rate of marriage for women was 76.5 per 10,000. But this had decreased to 37.4 per 10,000 in 2010. So that 37.4% of 10,000 women got married in 2008. The birth rate of the United States is now so low that it is below replacement rate, and 41% of all births in 2009 were to unmarried women. Nearly one in five births to women in their 30s was non-marital in 2007, compared with one in 2002. Amazing, huh? Children's lives track with these statistics. In 1970, 84% of children lived with their married biological parents, whereas by 2009, only 60% did so. In 2009, only 29% of African American children lived with their married biological parents, while 50% living in single mother homes. Furthermore, 58% of Hispanic children live with married biological parents, while 25% living in single mother homes. Importantly, a recent Harvard study on single parent families revealed the most prominent factor preventing many children from upward mobility is living with a single parent. Now, a lot of people going to be mad at me and say, that can't be true, and it's up to you what you do with your life, and we, Now, that's a really good argument, and normally I go there. I raised my daughter on my own. I also know biology, if I was a nurse. I also know that the brain and how bonding works with the, you know, the amygdala, the part of the brain that is responsible, if you will, for love and compassion. The heart, too, right? And, you know, if children don't get that beautiful combination of both parents, and both of them actually loving each other and then loving the child, it's like someone giving you, you know, tepid soup. It's like someone giving, you know, cold tea. It's just not enough. It's not enough for the child. The way that we were made, whether you think we were made from monkeys or we were made from God, our emotional, neurological, biological, I'm not even speaking about the soul, but a biological, physical self, the baby is literally, you know, so connected to the mother through birth. You give that baby away for adoption, and you may have every good reason to do so. And I have friends adopted, so there's nothing about them. They can't help what happens. But they are searching for those parents the rest of their life, one way or another. And it's a conscious search in the cells of their DNA to search. When a child is lost and small, that child will go crazy. That child will go absolutely, you know, ballistic, screaming, crying, where's my mother? What tells it to do that? What tells it that you need to seek that parent? And the answer is it's the DNA. It's in their cells. It's in every part of their body because they were literally cooked in the oven of their mother, if you will. You know, they were baked inside their mother. So, you know, as the fetus grows and the neurons expand along with the body, you have this great sense of security and love. The baby is fed and nourished, right? The physical baby. And so what happens is, of course, the child wants to spend much time with its mother, but also its father. So this does not surprise me. This, in fact, basically makes a lot of sense. And although the world is filled with, we have a lot of crises in the world, especially now with COVID, but I'm not even going to talk. I'm going to devote all next week to COVID, okay? Even though this is a show about healing the heart, I think, you know, a lot of us truth tellers have to talk about COVID, especially where vaccines are concerned. Because, you know, if you want to see your family have children, don't get a vaccine. They're putting in, you know, things in a sadly, the research yourself to make a woman infertile and then sterile. So that's just one reason not to take it, but there are many, many more. Okay. We'll talk about all that next week. So if you're really into like what's really happening, yeah, I've done a lot of research. I have belonged to a couple of truth groups. You know, I've had truth meetings on Zoom since it all began 9 months ago. So, you know, I have a lot of information and news and things that could really help people that they won't even put on the regular. So let's go back. Okay, let's go back. So this tells me that, you know, it's not a good experience for a child to grow up in a divorced home. It's not a good experience for a child to grow up in a single parent home. No matter how much that parent loves that child. It's very, very heartbreaking when one of the parents dies, especially when the child is young. So when, you know, again, thinking of John Lennon and his father killed and he was only 5 years old. And John spent all that extra time nurturing Sean that he never had the time when the Beatles were taking off and flying all over the world. He never had that time to do with his eldest son, George, right? And, you know, either way, both these children lost out on their father. And this is what I mean about ancestral inheritance. For all we know, Fred Lennon, John Lennon's father, he lost out on his father. We don't know the history, but if it was doable to look it up, you know, we might see that. So I think, you know, we have to stop the cycle. These are cycles of abuse. These are cycles of abandonment. Luckily, John did do the therapy, did very deep therapy to stop him. And that's why he spent 5 years solidly, not writing, not doing any music, but actually focusing on his newborn son. And he will have given him those first 5 years of the most precious years. And if you're going to be around, at least be around for 5 years. They say seven, you know, the age of seven is when the brain kind of, it begins to reason and logic, you know. And I think if you want your child to grow up emotionally intelligent and loving and supportive and empathetic and have compassion and be able to have relationships, you have to demonstrate this to the child. You have to demonstrate it to the children, not just one children. If you favor one child over another, that's abuse. If you say, well, my oldest will always be my favorite, that's abuse. because then neglecting the other children. So the children who weren't the favorite, they go out in the world and they're constantly neglected by their partners or by their dates or by their emotional connection. Or they're made to take someone who's basic and not really good enough, you know, because they didn't feel they were good enough. And this is how it plays out. Now, effect of divorce on children. I'm looking again from this very comprehensive, census here. Effects of divorce on children, each child and each family are obviously unique, with different strengths and weaknesses, different personalities and temperaments, and varying degrees of social, emotional, and economic resources, as well as differing family situations prior to divorce. Despite these differences, divorce has been to diminish a child's future competence in all areas of life, including family relationships, education, emotional well-being, and future earning power. That's really sad. It's like you're an automatic loser because your parents couldn't cut the mustard in the relationship, right? One review of the literature conducted in the United Kingdom found that although children are at increased risk of adverse outcomes following family breakdown, and that negative outcomes can persist into adulthood, the difference between children from intact and non-intact families is a small one, and the majority of children will not be adversely affected in the long term. There is much research, however, that offers evidence to the contrary. You know, we could say, oh, well, you were great. You know, in my own case, I can, you know, reflect back and think I did everything I learned from my parents to not. So when we never knew what time dinner was going to be on the table, I gave my daughter dinner every night, 6 o'clock on the table. You know, when we didn't know, we had to walk to school ourselves and come home ourselves, and it would be dark out because it gets dark and you know, it's early like here in the UK, you know, or it was cold, whatever the story was, I don't want to go into my drama, but I made sure my daughter was taken to school every morning and she was picked up every evening after school. And on time too. The mornings were rough for me, but she definitely got picked up on time. And, you know, she had anything to do with any needs, any, her uniform had to be, you know, for the first 10 years she didn't go to a school that had a uniform, so it didn't matter. But definitely when she was in secondary or called high school over here, they wore a uniform. And, you know, I made sure that uniform was clean. Everything was clean for her. She had a great healthy lunch every day that I packed. These are just little things that tell your child, A, you can trust me. B, I'm always going to be there for you. C, I love you. I want you to go to school and feel good. Three, not feel neglected, not worried about me or worried about you. You go to school and you learn and you do what you're supposed to do at school, right? And, you know, if something's not right, you tell me. And she would tell me if something's not right. You know, building trust with a child is so important. I'll go back to the report. So it's talking about the child may lose time with each parent. So this is about divorced parents again. And it says parents must adjust to their own losses as well. Their new role as the boy parents. Thus, parents may not have as much emotional strength and time to invest in parenting, i.e., the parents experience a moratorium on parenting. Number two, although laws are gradually changing, most children spend more time with one custodial parent and obviously have less time with each parent overall. When you split the child in half, it's like that story about King Solomon, and the woman came to him and said, this other woman is accusing me of stealing my own baby. And then this other woman said, that's my baby, and she stole my baby. And King Solomon, being the wise king he was, said, right, let's get a sword and we'll cut the baby in half and you can each have a half. And that is exactly when the mother of that baby said, no, 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 don't do that. Whether it was the one who was holding it or the one who was giving it up, it showed that the mother loved the child, will never want it to come to harm. And so when we divorce parents, this is a little bit of what happens. Sometimes they're immature and they get back at each other through the child. Oh, I'm going to buy the child, you know, lovely present. And then, you know, that could be the mother to make up for the loss of the father. The father's divorced, left. The father wants to create a relationship with the child. He's out of the house. What does he do? He buys the child a horse. He's way too young for the child to maintain the thing. But it's all this one-upmanship, nonsense, ego. What this shows the child, that neither one of these people actually care about the child. They care about themselves. They care about their ego. They care about how it looks. Children are not stupid. They're so smart. They're so emotionally tuned in. So here we go. I'm going to read the rest, right? For most children, this means less time spent with their mother. The child may also spend less time with their mother, as she may need to work longer hours to support the family. So we have the latchkey kid who comes home from school, 8 years old, 7 years old, 9 years old, sits there till the mother comes home from work, and no one comes. Not a babysitter, not a grandmother. This is a great place for grandmother, right? People moved away, people died, they're not interested, whatever. And the poor kid's sitting there all day by itself. Anything could happen. And the mother is, you know, I mean, it's so irresponsible. But a lot of mothers don't think they have the money to get a babysitter. And leaving your child these days with a stranger, well, with pedophilia on the rise, stolen by the hundreds of thousands every day, there is a part of me that says, can you blame them? You know, even leaving a child from a divorced family with a babysitter or a childminder or an au pair, and you haven't scrutinized that person, and you haven't known that person very long, you are taking a huge risk. It's not easy in this world today to have children. It's especially difficult when you call up the whole vaccine autism, which we're going to go into this week. I really, you know, I'm glad my daughter's grown up and she's 24. But I really don't think this is a good place in the world right now. And some of my beloved students just had faith, you know, and I'm thrilled for them. But it's a really difficult time to be a mother, to be a child. And the beat goes on. Here's some more. The child may lose economic security. Cut to a mother's experience loss of 20-50% of the pre-divorce income. Women divorced in the past 12 months are more likely to receive public assistance than divorced men, 23% versus 15%. So mothers automatically go into more poverty. They need to spend money taking care of the child. They need to put all their energies into the child. It's very difficult to work and raise a child, especially a baby. Even 5 years after divorce, mothers who remain single have only risen to 94% of their pre-divorce income, while continuously married couples have increased their income. In 2000, the median income of a single mother household was 47% of married couple households. That's quite a drop, isn't it? That's less than half. Custodial mothers have child support agreements, and 25% of mothers who have been granted support receive no pay. I think a lot of men think, screw it, I'm not going to pay for that. And there's a whole culture of baby mama BS, which never in a million years do they think of the child. oh, I have a baby with this one and a baby with that one and another baby with that one, and somehow that's supposed to be okay. All you're doing is abusing and neglecting children. If you can't pay for a child, you shouldn't have one, in my opinion. If you don't feel ready emotionally to bring a soul into this planet and take care of it and nurture it, then you are really committing a crime, in my opinion. Not because children don't come through accidents, through broken cars, through all kinds of situations. But if you're not willing to do the time, the energy, and the love, and the commitment, then you are hurting that child more than you are ever helping it. And these men who walk away, this is what my daughter's father did. He thought, well, I was adopted. I didn't have a real father. I didn't have a real mother. So I'm just going to leave. It's not important to me. And of course, once I did all the work, raised her, she showed up in her life. Like, oh, it's perfectly fine. You had 19 years on your own without me. And, you know, you can only imagine my words to him. And I still don't like him. And I still don't think my daughter should see him. But because she's grown up, what can I do about it? You know, she knows my opinion of him. I don't trust him. And any man that walks away, not once he walked away, but three times, he'll walk away again. You know, that's the immaturity. Now, do people learn from their mistakes? Sometimes. Sometimes they do. They learn from their mistakes. But often they don't. That's the sad fact. Let's read some more facts, statistics, okay? Here we go. Loss of an income may lead to increased work time for parents as well as a change in residence. So a lot of people who live in a nice home when they were married have to move into a council flat, or they move into a welfare flat, or they move into some crappy, you know, apartment that they can barely pay for. And it's a big loss, you know. Loss of income may lead to, children living with single mothers are much more likely to live in poverty than children living with both married parents, isn't it? In 2009, children living with a divorced parent were more likely to live in a household below the poverty level. That's 28% compared with other children, 19%. This is the U.S. Census Bureau giving you these statistics. These statistics are all from the U.S. and the U.K., okay? Unmarried women are more likely to remain in poverty compared with married individuals and unmarried men. Approximately 32% of other families in poverty during the first 2 months of 2009 continued to be in poverty for 36 months. In contrast, only 18.7% of people in married couple families in poverty during the same time remained in poverty for 36 months. Children living with single parents are less likely to experience upward financial mobility. The fraction of children living in single-parent households is the strongest negative correlation of upward income mobility, according to one study. The percentage of married families in a community also contributes to future upward economic mobility of all children in the community. The child may lose emotional security. The child may have a weakened relationship with her mother. Divorced mothers are less able to provide emotional support. The child may have a weakened relationship with his or her father. Divorced fathers spend less time with their children. A study in 1996 found that fewer fewer than half of children living with a divorced mother had seen their fathers at all in more than 1 year, and only 1 in 6 saw their fathers once a week. That's disgusting. There's no excuse for that. Okay, divorced fathers are rated as less caring by their adolescents. The child may find it more difficult to trust his or her father. And this has such huge ramifications in society. Number son. If you don't trust your father, you don't trust authority. So that's a good thing on some levels, because governments and police and even doctors abuse children, abuse adults, abuse, you know, their position. So maybe we're not all supposed to trust authority, you know. But when you're paranoid against authority, when authority is the big evil, you know, whatever, you can blame the relationship on the dysfunctional father who never showed up for his child or left and never came back or came back and promised one thing and did another. With children of divorced parents or children whose parents left, right, abandoned them. For girls, for little girls, in the first 7 years of life, but particularly from age two, the father represents eventually how this is in heterosexual relationships, okay? The father represents for a little girl how a man will look at her one day. Now, that means that if the father finds her sweet and adorable and valuable and really protective of her and really, you know, comes home from work and he really wants to see her, hi, my darling, how are you? Hi, sweetie. You know, tell daddy what you did today. That she feels that she belongs to this person. She also belongs in this family and she's valued. When the father comes home and doesn't want to know and doesn't engage with the child and could care less what she did all day, you know, and maybe shows the same, you know, disregard for the mother of the child. Well, the child learns that I'm not valuable and I'm not important and, you know, nobody cares about me. And you wonder why you see all these girls become anorexic or they cut themselves, or they starve themselves, anything to get love, anything to get attention. The pain that a child goes through, especially when they feel this kind of abandonment from the father or this neglect from the father or this literally could care less from the father, is as if God stuck a knife in your heart. I mean, this is for a child. Remember, our parents are God, you know, and if our parents neglect us, what, you know, if they decide we're not valuable, then what are we but a piece of dirt? You know, we're nothing. So children make these assumptions. They can't help that because they are from the get-go taught with their own brain development and their own heart development to love their parents. So if the parents don't give back in kind, or they just, this is another thing, this is how narcissism forms. You know, the parents just give them toys, give them gifts. Leave me alone, I'm busy. Here's $20. Go buy something. They don't give their time. They don't give their, you know, teaching the child things. Like the value of giving, or the value, not just give to them, but the value of giving. You know, like, let's go to a soup kitchen and help out. Teach your child to give to those less fortunate. Teach your child to pet an animal gently. Teach your child to respect nature. You know, these are things, not kill birds with a BB gun. You know, I'm shocked to learn that parents would give a child a BB gun to kill animals. You know, so, you know, what you're teaching is who they're going to be eventually. Right now. Sorry. Let's go back. Okay. The child may have. This is the other thing about divorced parents. The child may have a weakened relationship with the grandparent or relative, especially the parents of the non-custodial parents. And that's very sad because a lot of children want to be close to their grandparents. And a lot of grandparents will say, well, you know, our son divorced her, so she won't let us see our grandchildren. Well, that's not right. If the grandparents were abusive or toxic in any way, then maybe you have a case. But really, these are their blood as well. You know, and they have the right to see their grandchildren. The child may have a weakened The child may lose family with traditions, celebrations, and daily routines. Even adult children whose adult parents divorced later in life experience the loss of family traditions and disruption of celebrations. So maybe they don't have the, you know, the Seder with their family. Maybe they don't have the Christmas tree up every year or go and visit aunt so-and-so and uncle whoever, because they're no longer part of that family. How's that? Oh, my God. Sorry. Right, what is happening here?
Hello, you've
Nikki, I'm broadcasting right now my show. Okay, I have to go. Bye. Okay, I'm terribly sorry. Now, moving on. So let's go back here. The change in residence may lead to loss of friends, school environment, and other support systems. Very sad. It's extremely sad that these children move out. Maybe children grew up who were like, you know, their best friends or their support system. The child may have increased social and psychological maturation. College students whose parents were divorced were more likely to experience verbal aggression and violence from their partner during conflict resolution. Wow. You know, children of divorced parents have lower scores on self-concept and social relations. Anxiety and depression seem to worsen after the divorce event. The child may change his or her outlook on sexual behavior. There is increased approval by children of divorced parents of premarital sex, cohabitation, and divorce. There is earlier sexual debut. Girls whose fathers left the home before they were 5 years old were eight times more likely to become pregnant as adolescents than girls from intact families. 8 times. Similarly, have earlier sexual debut and higher rates of sexually transmitted disease when they have experienced divorce in their family. As adults, the female children of divorced parents experience less trust and satisfaction in romantic relationships. The children of divorced parents are less likely to view marriage as permanent and less likely to view it as a lifelong commitment. Children of divorced parents are 2 to 3 times more likely to cohabitate, to do so at younger ages. The child may lose his or her religious faith and practice. Following a divorce, children are more likely to abandon their faith. Since religious practice has benefits in areas such as sexual restraint, the child of divorce may lose this protection. The child may lose cognitive and academic stimulation. Children in divorced homes have less language stimulation. Children of divorced parents are more likely to have lower grade point averages, GPAs, and be asked to repeat a year of school. A study of 11 industrialized countries showed that children living in two-parent families had higher math and science scores. Children in single mother families were twice as likely to have been absent from school for 11 or more days in the past year due to illness or injury, 6%, compared with children in two-parent families, 3%. Children of married parents attain higher income levels as adults. Shall I go on? It's pretty damn obvious, isn't it, that you need to create a healthy life for the future, you need two healthy adult parents. And they need to love each other, and they need to live together, and they need to show that emotional intelligence to their children. The child may be less physically healthy. Fewer children in nuclear families were considered to be in poor health than children in non-nuclear families. 12% of children in families versus 22% of children of single parents. Emergency room usage is higher for children in all other family types over that experienced by children in nuclear families. And this is Family Structure and Children's Health in the United States, 2010. Children in nuclear families were less likely than children in other family types to have a learning disability or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, regardless of parent education, income, or area of residence. Family Structure and Children's Health in the United States, 2010. Children living with married parents are less likely to be abused or neglected. In one study, the relative risk that children from a single parent family will be physically abused or neglected more than doubled. And again, Family Structure and Children's Health in the United States, 2010. The child may have a higher risk of emotional distress. A study of almost 1 million children in Sweden demonstrated that children growing up with single parents were more than twice as likely to experience a serious psychiatric disorder, commit or attempt suicide, or develop an alcohol addiction. Children of single parents are twice as likely to have emotional and behavioral problems, 8% versus 4% for children from two-parent households. The CDC reported on adverse family experiences among children in non-parental care. So that means children who are non-parental care, foster children, foster care, things like that. The study found children living with one biological parent were between 3 and 8 times as likely as children living with two biological parents to have experienced neighborhood violence, or caregiver incarceration, or to have lived with a caregiver with mental illness or an alcohol or drug problem. And it goes on and on. Effects of divorce. I'm going to read a little bit more, and then we're going to sort of wrap it up and sum up. Okay, there's so much in here. So if you want this report, as I said, I'm going to leave it at the bottom of YouTube. I'm going to put it in the in our group on Facebook called The Shape of My Heart, a link to it, and you can read it yourself. Effects of divorce on parents. Parents who divorce also experience adverse effects on their physical, emotional, and financial well-being, which may also turn to affect their children. Married female people are more likely to have better physical health. Married people smoke and drink less when they're married. Married men are less likely to commit suicide than men who are divorced or separated. Married individuals have the lowest incidence of diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease. This is taken from 2000. Married men are more likely to live longer than after a diagnosis of cancer, especially prostate cancer. Married men live longer than men who never married. Framingham offspring study, married men had a 46% lower rate of dying from cardiovascular disease than unmarried men. Married male-female people are more likely to have higher income. Individuals who are married have greater wealth. The longer they stay married, the greater the wealth accumulation. Men especially benefit, as married men earn 22% more than single men. Women who experience divorce face a 27% decrease in their standard of living. It's shocking, but here it is. Married women are more likely to be physically safer than divorced or physical or separated women. Married and widowed women experience less intimate partner violence than divorced or separated women. Married individuals are more likely to be involved in their community. Married people have more civic responsibility, are more likely to volunteer in service projects, and are more likely to be involved in schools and churches. Divorce may have adverse long-term effects for parents. And it just goes on and on. Effects diminish the child's future, weakening the family structure. it just goes on and on. So I'm going to just read this little conclusion, and then we're going to go to some hopeful things that can help. And here it is, basically. The conclusion, these are clearly negative long-term consequences of divorce. Children, parents, and society all suffer. Wallerstein's long-term study shows that many children never have full recovery, as each special event, holiday, or celebration reminds the child of his or her loss. Given these tremendous costs borne by all individuals affected by divorce, as well as the cost to society, it is the responsibility of physicians, especially pediatricians, who care for children in the context of their family, to advocate for public health policies that promote marriage and decrease the likelihood of divorce. Now, we're not talking about religion. We're not talking about strapping someone into a family that they hate. We're talking about learning how to do therapy, go to family counseling. You know, think about what you're doing. Think about what the cost of it is to your child, because the cost is much greater to that child than it ever will be to you. You can walk away and start 10 new families, but that child will always be the child left behind. And that child will never, ever, in its heart, forgive you for leaving. And that child will grow up with bitter resentment, and it just goes from there. If you've got something festering in your heart, festering over and over and over again, what do you think the outcome is going to be of that? Either the person's going to have, severe mental health issues, depression, perhaps suicidal thoughts, or it's going to go to drugs or alcohol to kind of repress those kind of thoughts, or it's going to end up being violent or abusive in its own family. I mean, the outcomes are really crappy. So children are more important than your job. They're more important than the latest girlfriend. They're much more important than your dog or your cat. They're more important than your income. They're more important than how it looks. They're more important than, your brand new car, the latest, short skirt that walks down to the local restaurant or bar with you. Grow up is what I'm saying. And this is particularly aimed at men because it is particularly men that need. It is particularly men who don't want to face the responsibilities towards their children. They're not willing to do the therapy. They're not willing to look inside themselves. They're not willing to think about the damage they incur when they leave a child behind and never look back, or see the child once every blue moon, or see the child once a month. It is absolutely diabolical. The question that you have to ask yourself is, would you like it if someone did that to you? Would you like it if someone thought of you as so meaningless in their lives? Oh, I don't care. I'll see you once a month. Yeah, that's cool. Well, maybe you live across the, United States or England or wherever you live. So what? Move. The child is more important. And until people realize that, until they recognize what they contribute to society through the lack of love that they give to their children, through, breaking up the family and turning it into a massacre for the child, you will never see this planet move. This planet and everything that's going on right now, and everything that certain parties would like to see happen, and I will go into it much deeper next week, would love to see the family unit break up, children be raised by the government, children be chipped and ID'd like dogs and cats, and controlled by the government. And this is a big thing that they're trying to make happen right now. And the more that you invest into the family unit, that it's perfectly okay to walk away from your children. It's perfectly okay to walk away and never pay for them, so that the mother is on her knees trying to make, a home for five kids or one kid, and she's ill, or, she can't do it all by herself. Or, there used to be a time when families chipped in, like uncles, aunts, grandparents. That doesn't happen anymore. So, grow up and wake up. If you have children, you need to decide whether or not you're going to be a good parent and stop the ego, you know, the raging ego that makes you want to leave and never look back. Or are you going to be a child yourself and, you know, pitch a hissy fit because you didn't get everything your own way? And, you know, it was much, much harder raising a child than you thought. So you just leave. You know, everything has consequences. Everything. Every little thing. Now, going to the lovely children who have to suffer. And in this document, there is tons and tons and tons of references. There's 4 pages of references. So that's why I chose it. It's really well written and documented. And it goes from, it's a 35-year study, so it's pretty comprehensive. Here's what I would suggest. Other than therapy, there's some great books. I love books. Don't have money for therapy, for God's sake, get a book. You can get them on, some of them are free on Kindle, and some of them you can get at the library for free, of course. And, you know, you can buy used books on eBay for a couple quid or a couple dollars. So here's a good one. It's called The Heart of Parenting, and it's How to Raise an Emotionally Intelligent Child. Whether you're single, divorced, married, a parent, a widow or a widower, These are really good tools. So John Gottman. And again, I'll list all the books in our Facebook group. This is by the woman who wrote Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, Susan Jeffers. And it's called Freeing Ourselves from the Madness of Parenthood, Letting Go of the Guilt and Trusting Who We Are. And this is really good to encourage parents who maybe made mistakes, who maybe feel guilty about things they did. Get back on the horse and ride. Get this book. It'll help you. Here's another great book. And this is a beautiful book. Parents Are People Too. And a reassuring and practical program designed to help parents accept and effectively deal with the negative feelings that are an unavoidable part of being a parent. If you come from a broken home, you're going to have these type of feelings when you have children. It can't be helped. Your own inner child is going to remind you over and over again how hard it was to be in that kind of family system. So this book is written by Catherine Gordy Levine, and she's also written When Good Kids Do Bad Things, because good kids can go bad. And a lot of this has to do with what's going on with the family. I love this book. I've learned a lot from this book. This is a great book. It's called Children Believe Everything You Say. And it's Creating Self-Esteem with Children. It's by Jennifer Day. And children really believe everything you say. So if you say, oh, you're not very good at spelling, are you? Then the child will grow up to think, oh, I can't spell. Never try harder, never think about it. It's only a certain child who's saying, well, I'll show you, you know, I will be good at stuff. But usually children, my mother thinks that I'm not pretty. I mean, what a horrible thing to hear a child say. My mother thinks that I'm too, you know, I'll never play an instrument well, I'm tone deaf. But what do you think about yourself? Well, I don't know, my mother said that, it must be true. Or my father, you know. So we have to be very cautious when we speak to children. We have to think about, is it something that is positive for the child to hear? I believe in saying the truth. I knew a parent when I was raising my daughter. I kid you not, she used to tell the biggest lie to her 2 daughters. And she used to say, well, your father's off helping his mother in South Africa. Now we're in London. And the children grew up and finally asked the $9 million question, like, what do you mean he's helping his mother? Why hasn't he come here to see us? Why doesn't he get involved? Where is he really? And the guy was a cab driver down the road, literally a cab driver in a minicab who worked down the road. And he didn't want to know from them, and she didn't know what to say. When my daughter said, where's my father, mommy? I said, your father lives in Cornwall, and he doesn't choose to become a part of this family right now. And that may change one day, but, you know, I'm here for you, and I will never leave you, and I will always be here for you. And, you know, it never really was a problem for us. She never said, oh, I don't have a father. She might have had to say it at school, but she never showed me that she was upset about it. It's only when he came back that there were a lot of problems for us. Because I really didn't trust him, and I didn't think he was good enough to come back. If he left, he came before and left, and I let him come through much scrutiny, and then he turned around and left again. And, of course, that broke her little heart. So, you know, she's really into not being rejected. She hates rejection, and you can't blame her because she felt very rejected, not once when she was a baby, but twice. So, you know, we are here to love ourselves. Sometimes the lessons are excruciatingly painful. Sometimes they're diabolical. They're like sent from hell, you know? But when you get older and you are able to reflect back and see the things that have happened in your life, I will say that sometimes you really get, wow, maybe that's why that happened. Maybe I needed to love myself, to stand up for myself. Maybe I needed to learn how to be bold, how to be strong, how to be courageous. A lot of children who grow up in one-parent family are often learning those lessons. Or they're learning that they can become whoever they want to be. They don't have to grow up and be poor like their mother or their father. They can be whoever they want to be, but they will have to confront the demons and the psychological conditioning that shows single-parent families in welfare homes and council flats. You know, we should be, as a society, giving a crap about our single-parent families. We should be, as a society, caring about the child from the minute it gets born to all during its school system, and especially going to university, and being able to offer these things, whether the money's there or not. These are things that are really every child should have. The availability of a loving, secure family, food on the plate, you know, clothes in the closet, and enough money to certainly be taken care of, you know, medically speaking and emotionally as well. And sometimes when it all gets too much, here's another book I want to recommend, Parenting, just like the 12-step program, One Day at a Time. And this is quite a good book, and it gives you a lot of references for things like, you know, when, again, parenting is not easy. It brings up a lot of your triggers, right? And I think, you know, this helps. This helps to calm down the inner self, to grow spiritually through parenting, to let your child grow in the way that that child wants to grow. Sometimes we force children to be what we think they should be. That's terribly wrong. We are not, our children are not here to live out our unlived and unrealized dreams. That is abuse. Our children are here to live out their dreams, their goals, who they really are, and that creates healthy mind, body, spirit in them. And finally, for us who grew up in dysfunctional homes, things will be different for my daughter. And I bought this book, A Practical Guide to Raising Your Daughter from Infancy Through the Teen Years and Beyond. And it's a really good book because, unfortunately, girls, you know, a lot of girls have such issues with, you know, self-worth, self-esteem, and particularly they may not be encouraged in school the way boys are. And these things really affect children. You know, I'll just give you one more example and then wrap up. When my daughter was little, she was very smart, very clever, you know, just quick. You know, she was working early. She was talking in full sentences. And she started reading at 4. And when she finally went to primary school, you know, she would raise her hand. She knew the question. She knew the answer to the question. And the kids would get, went to school here in London, and the kids would get a, you know, a like a little sticker that said Child of the Week. I mean, Student of the Week, I'm sorry. Student of the Week. And she brought one home at the beginning of school, and I said, oh, that's nice, and put it on the fridge. And she explained to me what it was. Oh, I answered questions in class, and my teacher gave me that. That's really nice. I mean, that's wonderful. And good for you, you know. And then a couple months went by, and a couple more months, and it was like spring. And I said to her, how come you haven't had any more of these, you know, child of the student of the week thing? And she said, I don't know. And I said, do you answer questions in class? She said, I stick my hand up all the time. And I knew that was true, because I know my daughter. And I said, so you stick your hand up all the time. Does the teacher call on you? She said, sometimes, but mostly she doesn't call. And I said, she doesn't call on you? Why is that? She said, well, I don't know. So, of course, I smelled a rat. And I went down to the school, and I asked for a conference with this teacher. And this teacher was, you know, embarrassed when I brought it up. And she said, of course, your daughter's very clever. Oh, the only reason I don't call on her is because I know she'll know the answer. So you're telling me my daughter's clever. You don't call on her because you know she knows the answer. And because of that, you never give her a student of the week award. And she was like stunned. So what are you teaching my daughter, that it's not good to be clever? I mean, you're rewarding other children to answer that question, but because she knows the answer, she doesn't get the reward. You know, that's not appropriate teaching. She went, oh, Miss Khan, I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry. I didn't realize. And I said, well, you're a teacher. Shouldn't you realize that? I mean, I could figure that out, and I'm not a primary school teacher. She said, oh, I promise you I will reward her from now then on. But you see, the damage is done with children. When you do that with them, they automatically think, oh, well, it's not good to be smart. It's not good to be intelligent. Or I'm a girl. I'm not supposed to be intelligent. And it's just bullshit, man. It's just horrible, horrible, you know, women projecting their own garbage onto children. All children should be smart. All children should be emotionally well-balanced. All children should be loved and nourished and cared for. You know, and they shouldn't have parents who they're afraid of. They shouldn't have parents who are so broken inside that they just dump all their garbage on their children and don't think of the consequences. So my bottom line here is, grow up, family. Grow up out there. If you're not an emotionally mature person, don't have children. Okay, save these little ones' broken hearts and families and ancestors for years and years to come, centuries to come, where children are just broken inside. And they're committing more and more heinous crimes because of it. Okay, psychopathy, sociopathy, narcissism, bipolar, you name it. They all come from broken families. It isn't just the chemicals in the brain. The way the brain is wired to love its parents. And if you love a parent who's mentally ill and they're demonstrating this kind of behavior to you, then what does that show the child to do? Right? So my advice is, as I've always said, I'm very, I just think people should really think about it. If you need help, you want to get your family sorted, and you listen to me and it made you think, what this show's about, and more importantly, it made you feel, go find a good family therapist. Bring your spouse, whether you're divorced, not together, and sort out a plan to make sure those children get their needs met. Go find any family therapist. If the parent is an abuser of drugs or alcohol, go to places for free like Families Anonymous. Families Anonymous are there to help people get the family healed, okay? And it's free. You pay a donation, whatever you have. They have meetings online, meetings all over the world. Just look them up, Google them, Families Anonymous. And finally, Never argue in front of your children, to your significant other, excuse me, your spouse, or anyone that child also loves, like its grandparents. You will create an irreparable rift between you two for that child in their heart. Tell the child often how much they mean to you, how much you love them, no matter what, and how much that other person does too, even if it doesn't look like it. Don't lie, like my friend who told that story to her children. Don't fabricate a story. Just be real. Children appreciate honesty. And when you are honest with your children, you don't have to be brutally honest. But when, you know, you gently tell the truth, children will be much, much happier and more mentally well-balanced. And on that note, I want to say to you, you know, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas as we come into the season. We're going out on a beautiful song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It's called, of course, Teach Your Children. And we'll see you next week. We're going to talk about the vaccine story and what's really going on with COVID-19. So if you're into what they call conspiracies, but of course the truth is always a conspiracy, please come back and find us, as I said, on Facebook, Shape My Heart. So let me play us out. And until then, be good to yourself and be really good to your children. They need you more than you will ever know, and they love you.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you. Your elders grew by, and so please help them with yours. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they
by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And we'll leave it there till next week, folks. God bless. Goodbye for now.